Today begins my series on Confucius, Buddha, Jesus, and Muhammad, four of the most influential human beings who have ever lived. And each of them was a master teacher in the art of living, the art of living nobly and deliberately and fully and well. So I'm drawing from a lot of different resources for these talks, but primarily to give credit where credit is due, I'm keying off of the Great Courses class on Confucius, Buddha, Jesus, and Muhammad. And we'll primarily be focusing on each individual and their teachings, rather than the religion that they are regarded as having founded. And just to remember, one of the reasons we do that is because these individuals, at least some of them, were affiliated with a different religion than the one that they were later associated with. And also not one of them had made it his life mission to establish a new religion. Rather, they were calling their fellow, their colleagues, the people around them, up to a higher level of truth, a higher consciousness, if you will. And we will see that each of them had their own distinct message and point of view, but they all seem to agree on one central truth, that human beings must cultivate compassion and humility in order to overcome self-centeredness, what we would call egocentricity, which lies at the root of all unhappiness. So today we begin with Confucius. So for most of my life, I have associated Confucius with fortune cookies. Anybody else? I'm just being honest here, right? Because when I was growing up, quite often, the fortune inside the fortune cookie would be attributed to Confucius, whether he actually said that or not, right? So you would crack it open, Confucius says, and then we have a proverb like people who live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones or something like that. So this was very common back then. And so many of us, if not most of us in the West, came to think of Confucius as this wise old man who was uttering these pearls, these jewels of wisdom, and sometimes kind of puzzling riddles that were a little challenging to figure out. Well, it is true that Confucius conveyed these great insights in short, very pithy and thought-provoking statements. But that is just a tiny part of who he was. So Confucius lived from 551 before the Common Era to 479 before the Common Era, which means he lived to the age of 72 or so in the land that we now call China. And the story goes that his parents conceived him in a field and then went to a sacred mountain to pray that the conception would be successful. And then, presumably 9 months later, when he was born, they named him Kongxi. Kong, which means gratitude for answered prayer, and Xi, which means hill. Isn't that lovely? And so from what we know, his father died when he was just a toddler, and his mother raised him in poverty. He came from royal heritage, but the family had fallen on very, very hard times. So his father passed away, his mother raised him, and he had apparently a concavity, like a sort of a dent on the top of his head. You don't really see it in that picture I had up there before. But he was also uncommonly tall, which when you think about it was kind of advantageous because then nobody could see that concavity on the top of his head. And, and he married a young woman when they were both in their late teens. They had a son and a daughter, but it is said that they later divorced. And so as much as anything, Confucius loved learning. And he loved helping other people learn. And so he established his own school at the age of 22. And one of the key things that he emphasized in that school was what he called, or what was called, mindfulness in the learning practice. In other words, pay attention. He really drummed that into his students, the importance of paying attention. Nevertheless, he was not a rigid teacher. He more commonly would use informal means of teaching rather than formal. He liked to teach the students through conversation by posing questions to them, and he would tailor the lessons to each student's needs. Well, then for a while, he stepped away from teaching. He decided to work in the government. He had very high standards for how leaders should be. He said that virtuous leaders would inspire a virtuous society. Well, it was a very tumultuous time in China. When he got into the government, he didn't see a whole lot of virtue there, despite his best efforts to help instill that, right? He saw a lot of corruptive influences, and so after 4 or 5 years, he resigned, and he went back. He went out and traveled for a while as what we would call a political consultant, but eventually went back to his first and greatest love, which was teaching. And so teaching and learning and self-improvement were the focal points of his life for the rest of his days. But what drove him the most, his overriding passion, was a fervent desire to restore China to its earlier greatness, to its former glory days, if you will. And of all the four sages that we'll be looking at, he was the one who focused the most on the past. He believed we needed to bring the lessons of the past into now, to continue to be guided by the past. It wasn't so much that he felt that, that those who forget the past are condemned to repeat it, but rather that if we forget the past, we are doomed to moral and social decline. And so he was very focused on keeping the sort of the basic ideas, important ideas from the past alive and improving upon them. So when he was alive, China was going through a very tumultuous time. It was in turmoil, and there were many warring factions competing for power and influence. Can you imagine that? The urgent question of the day was how to achieve human harmony. And what was on the minds of all the thinkers of that day was, what does it take for people to get along with each other? This was 2,500 years ago, and we're still asking that question. So for Confucius, the answer was virtue and morality. And virtue was paramount, and the most important virtue was what was called Ren, spelled R-E-N, Ren. And it can best be translated as noble humaneness. It comprised kindness, benevolence, goodness, compassion, and reciprocity as evidenced in Confucius's golden rule, what you do not wish for yourself, do not impose on others. Confucius saw Ren as the wellspring of all the virtues of the perfect person. Perfectionism was a part of his philosophy, specifically striving for moral perfection. Without a doubt, his Enneagram type would have been a one. Anybody know what that means? He was a perfectionist. And evidently, his perfectionism could be a little bit challenging. His disciples wrote, "When the meat was not cut squarely, he would not eat. When a thing was not accompanied by its proper sauce, he would not eat." That makes him seem a little obnoxious, right? So he, but he was eminently likable. One scholar described him as, quote, genial and yet strict, imposing and yet not intimidating, courteous and yet at ease. In times of war or instability, his dictates is important. In times of war or instability, all of his dictates on how to govern, how to dress, and how to live offered the tantalizing promise of order. You see, people were gravitating that for stability, gravitating to that. So here are some of his, loveliest teachings on how to live. Respect yourself, and others will respect you. It does not matter how slowly you go, as long as you do not stop. To be wronged is nothing unless you continue to remember it. If we don't know life, how can we know death? We should feel sorrow, but not sink under its oppression. This is a good one. This is thought-provoking. When anger rises, think of the consequences. It's good, right? And this is lovely. If you think in terms of a year, plant a seed. If you think in terms of 10 years, plant trees. If you think in terms of 100 years, teach the people. You know, some of his teachings align very well with what we teach in Unity, two stand out: his concept of heaven, which is similar actually to our notion of God, and second is his emphasis on continuous self-improvement. So for Confucius, heaven, which was the word tian, T-I-A-N, it was a dynamic, creative reality that gave and supported life on earth. It was kind of like our concept of God, in that he saw heaven as an overarching principle or force, not a super being, not a deity. And this force had certain powers, but not absolute power. So human beings still had what we would call free will. However, Confucius did believe that heaven, this overarching force, wanted humans to be good. And that is where he put his emphasis, on humans being good. He held himself and others to a higher standard. And he largely did that, his spiritual practices, his way of achieving moral perfection, if you will, was by restraining one's desires. So it was less of a releasing the imprisoned splendor and more sort of holding back from temptation, if you will. So that meant, for example, living simply, practicing self-discipline and self-restraint, and engaging in what he called quiet sitting, which was not so much an opportunity to commune with the divine as it was introspection and self-examination. So it was really looking within you to where you still had deficiencies that needed to be addressed, to become more discerning and self-aware. And ritual was an extremely important part of his philosophy. He thought all of life, this is so beautiful the way this is worded, he thought all of life should be like a grand ritual, that in personal interactions, humans should display the same poise and decorum one would expect in a sacred ceremony. Isn't that just, you feel a sort of stateliness? He emphasized good manners and being considerate of other people's feelings, even when you don't feel like it. The idea seemed to be that if you acted kindly and mannerly long enough, you would actually start to feel that way. So it's kind of a fake it till you make it approach. As one writer said, you may not feel particularly humble, but after several thousand bows and prostrations, feelings of genuine humility begin to surface. I've become so fond of him by studying him. He was a gentleman and a scholar, known for his wisdom, his compassion, and his humility. He spoke eloquently and cautiously, choosing his words carefully. I actually kind of think of him as a gentle giant. He didn't consider himself to be the ideal person others took him to be, and he never imagined that he would become an icon. When he died, he was convinced that he was a failure. Of his 3,000 students, only 72 were true disciples, said to have mastered his teachings, which they compiled in the book, The Analects, that's A-N-A-L-E-C-T-S, of Confucius. It's become a classic book, known worldwide, with immense influence. So powerful is this collection of conversations, of aphorisms, of sayings, stories, etc., that one prime minister said, with just half the Analects, I can govern the empire. Today, there is growing interest in Confucius in China and all over the world. In China, he is now known just simply as the sage. So I pulled from my study just some of the sort of key lessons I think we can draw from him in our own lives to help guide us in our spiritual growth. The first is to live simply, to not get caught up in material things. Comport yourself, in other words, carry yourself, bear yourself with dignity, humility, and propriety. Be kind to others, even when you don't feel like it. Strive for order and harmony in all things. You know, I think sometimes we think order means it's going to hold us back, but in so many ways, order can set us free, right? A sense of discipline and order opens up new opportunities for us. Exercise self-restraint and self-discipline. Live and lead by example. There's so much finger-pointing going on these days, labeling the other, making the other people wrong. This is about your virtue. This is about how you live and how you show up. And your virtue will inspire virtue in others. And finally, keep learning, keep questioning, keep growing, because that is why we are here. That is our purpose. That's what I've learned about Confucius on this 4th of July weekend. I'm really just contrasting how he was and what he taught with some of the things going on in our society. We would do well to heed the call of Confucius for greater virtue, dignity, humility, order, compassion, and noble humaneness. Today, I'm affirming that all of those things for all of you and for this beautiful country of ours, for today and all the days to come. Let's turn now to our meditation. I invite you to close your eyes and breathe in deeply. And as you exhale, just release and let go. And just feeling all of your busy thoughts, any cares and concerns, just dropping away. Feel how safe you are in this moment, how loved you are. Mother Earth supporting you, the divine presence enfolding you. And breathe. We take a moment to appreciate that each of us is here for our own unique purpose, to give our gifts, to share our journeys, to learn, to grow, to be the best expression of the divine and human form that we can be. We allow ourselves to turn our thoughts to 2,500 years ago, when a man named Confucius was doing similar work, striving to attain moral perfection in his life and help establish that in the world. We send him a prayer of gratitude and appreciation. And take his lessons to heart, each in our own way. Allow you to connect with whatever in his teachings has resonated for you today, living simply, creating order, greater kindness, humaneness, more time for introspection, whatever. And sit with it for just a few moments in the silence. Give thanks for the wisdom of the ancient sages who have pointed us to a higher level of harmony, awareness, consciousness, awakening. We learn by their examples. We're so grateful for their love and for their teachings and their wisdom. And so we go forward from this day with some additional insights for ourselves, ready to apply those in our lives and in the world to truly transform this world. And for these blessings, for these resources and this inspiration, we're so grateful. Thank you, God. And so it is. So we let it be. Amen.
Show, Spirit, show through me. I open up to be an expression of your unfolding love.
Learn something? Yeah. Oh, no.